maestro to the pit. Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of Grace Notes. I am your host, Grace, and I'm here to talk to you about all the little things that embellish music history, theory, culture, and all that jazz. Get it? Jazz. A new look at old music. So, this week's episode is lightly inspired by some events of, while I'm recording this on August 31st, some events of this last week with our dear, dear Taylor Swift. All right, so Taylor Swift has released a new single and is going to release a new album, and my musical opinions aside, well, no, this is my podcast. It's not really my feelings aside at all, but I'm not going to talk about my musical feelings about Taylor Swift particularly because I'm not really well versed in pop music theory and all that. I definitely enjoy it. I'm not saying, oh, I'm above pop music. I just don't listen to it. No, I love pop music. I just don't consider it an area where I'm going to, like, get up on my soapbox and talk about Taylor Swift. Anyway, big news happened with Taylor Swift. Some shit went down. She released a music video and a single that is just full of the tea. But what I would like to talk about with in that regard is, unless you are living under some kind of rock under which you don't have any internet or Wi-Fi, and you can't hear people talking about it. Like, take the world's most isolated, disconnected rock, and then there is a person underneath it. So if you have not heard of the Look What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift, you must be under that rock, because that is the only thing I've seen in my newsfeed anywhere. It's been on my Instagram, my Twitter, my Facebook. I cannot escape Taylor Swift. It's Swiftomania! Which is sort of inspired me to talk about something totally different, which is called Listomania, for Franz Liszt, who we talked about in the last episode. Franz. But it's like this hysteria, this mania, this pandemonium, and everyone's just losing their minds. I'm seeing reaction videos from her fans, people who hate her, and I was just thinking, wow, man, what would we do without fans of music? They really, like, I mean, obviously people make art for it to be consumed, but there is this culture in the internet, I'm not sure if you're aware, of, like, the fandom, and just, like, this die hard, I will support, this is my thing, and I freaking love it, and all that jazz. And I am here to tell y'all that this isn't a new phenomenon. A lot of people have heard of Beatlemania, which was the whole craze of the Beatles. Usually when people are talking about this sort of mania, it's referring to female fans going crazy and just loving and have just, like, this obsessive culture. Because, let's face it, there are actually some great podcasts on this subject, particularly, shout out to Discovery with, like, Stuff Mom Never Told You and Stuff You Missed in History Class, with talking about how young women have basically been the locus of cultural change for forever. Like, you look at changes in language, and women are quicker to adopt new language trends and to set them, and then we see it being adopted by guys who are then like, ugh, who at first were like, ugh, that's gross, why are you doing that, why are women doing vocal fry, I hate it so much, and then you hear men doing vocal fry too. But anyway, long ass tangent, back to the main point, which is mania, usually inspired by female fans, is not new. This is not something that was first scene with, like, rock stars in the traditional sense. And it is not unique to rock and pop music. What it is related to is music that is popular at the time. And much to my great dismay, I must admit that classical music is not as popular as pop music today. To my great dismay. I mean, as much as I love having things like penicillin and rights, if I could have lived in the 19th century with penicillin and rights, ugh, 'twould have been a happy, happy time. Because classical music was, like, the thing, and classical musicians were rock stars and performers. But, so this is, like, the longest lead-in to an episode that I've ever done, I think. But anyway, today is focused on the fandom. And the two examples I'm going to use are actually both Austro-Hungarian German composers. And one of them I'm going to be talking about in terms of, like, how they were, like, how they acquired the fans and very centered around the composer. The other one I'm going to be talking about one super fan. One fan in particular that is of so much note. And I frankly find very relatable. So, much like I do my podcast for y'all, it's all about the fans. This episode is all about the fans. So we're going to start with the super fan. Oh, the super fan. But first we're going to talk about the origin of this particular super fan. I'm just going to keep stringing y'all along until we get to the main point. Anyway, so with classical music, for a very, very long time, once you get into, like, the late Baroque, common practice era, beginning of the classical era, that you see the adoption of this practice where composers and performers would get what are called patrons. These are not fans. Well, they are fans. They're just fans with a crap ton of money who are like, I like what you do, sir. I will pay for you to compose things. If you play for me and if you live in my estate and write me things and play for me and play private concerts for me. But, oh yes, then I'll give you money to do your other things too, but keep me happy. So, it's this very, on the surface, it looks like a pretty symbiotic relationship. Like, oh yeah, it's just this rich guy giving all this money to this artist. That's great. But it's also a little bit subversive when it gets political, like it always does, especially in this podcast. Sorry, not sorry. But the patron system, it did very much, in some cases, particularly in the case of Rossini, who his patron was actually one of the people who was trying to, like, keep Italy from becoming Italy when Italy was the Papal States. They were like, no, maybe don't do that. Here's some military force to make sure that does not happen. But then Rossini is, like, scrawling the Italian flag and Viva Italia into his scores. But, oh no, that's not political. Yes, it is. Which I'm going to do an episode on eventually. The entire Risorgimento and all that. Because I have feelings about everything, but especially that. So, like most things, it had its pros, it had its cons. Artists got money. So they got to compose things and put on performances. And we get to sing that stuff today. Love it. But it was not without its consequences. But as we go on and music moves out of the church, out of royalty, and more into, like, a, this is something that everyone can enjoy. You see artists getting more agency. Would you look at that? And less dependent on such a system. Unless you're Richard Wagner, romantic German composer. He was born in 1813. Fun fact, same year as Verdi, one of my other favorites, and he died in 1883, so, like, living, not like, actually living in 19th century, hardcore, romantic composer. He was also an anti-Semitist. I feel like it's very important to acknowledge, especially about our favorite composers, their flaws. Because we can't put them up on a pedestal. That's not a good thing. Do not. Just don't. I swear. You have to look at your composer as a whole person. So, Wagner, huge, prolific German composer of the Romantic era. But because he was German in the 19th century, also more than likely anti-Semitist. However, he did also go on to write an essay under a pseudonym called Jewry in Music. That's pretty anti-Semitic, y'all. That's pretty bad. So, yeah, no, not the best dude. But he was also kind of a political radical. He actually got kicked out of Germany for a bit, for a lot of reasons. He was kind of a scandalous womanizer. He had outlandish political views. He was also just kind of really racist. So people are like, you know, maybe just, like, don't, sir. But, you know, the one person who never thought that, who just truly loved Wagner, it was Mad King Ludwig. So Mad King Ludwig was born in, pull up my fact sheet, was born in, oh, he reigned from 1864 to 1886. He was born in 1845 and died in 1886. He mysteriously died during his reign. Air quotes, mysteriously. We all know what that means. Implies murder. I think it makes it more interesting. But it's still listed as mysterious circumstances. So he was much younger than Wagner, but he was, like, obsessed. Like, legit, y'all. Obsessed. Mad King Ludwig was kind of known for kind of living in excess. I actually got to visit his childhood home while I was in Germany. And that was, Hohenschwangau Castle, which was a vacation palace where there were to be no politics, but would eventually become his childhood home. And it's very much in the style of this, the knights and all that, and this very romanticized knighthood, valor, old school values that he was not alive for because it was not the 19th century. Not about knights. That was antiquated back then, just to put that into context for people who also struggle with history times like I used to. But, yeah. His whole house was just surrounded by fairy tales and fantasy and knights and these old stories. And that's going to become important later. That's actually why he really liked Wagner's operas. Actually, one of the first operas that he saw, Lohengrin, tells the story of a knight who comes to compete for a lady's love, and it also he's brought to this town by a giant swan. And for those of you who do not speak German, Hohenschwan means swan. And it is also that was like the town bird. Swans are a big deal. So you have kid who grows up with knights all over his house and swans. Knights and swans, and then there's an opera that has both, and he's like, whoa, this is great, this man is amazing, and also the score is just gorgeous, like, oh my god. I'm gonna put in an excerpt, and the playlist, please listen to the playlist. I really hope you guys all listen to it, because it really, a podcast about music with no music is just sad. But, you know, I can't afford to pay for, like, royalties and rights to play things. So please listen to the playlist. So that is when, at the time, not Mad King, just King Ludwig at this point, developed this super fandom for Wagner. So they actually had a meeting At this point in Wagner's life, let's just set the stage here. He'd written a couple of operas that were very successful. However, he was being chased down by creditors because he was in debt. And not so popular with the Bavarian locals because he was a womanizer. And, you know, that's not a good thing. It's really not. Your reputation gets around. No one really likes you because it's just, you're not being a very moral person. And in the 19th century, the attitudes are either, yeah, free love, do whatever you want, and love each other, it's great. Or it's very conservative, depending on where you go, because different countries have different attitudes toward these things. But, yeah. So he goes to meet with Ludwig, and effectively gains his patronage and his fandom and his money. That is the most important thing here. And Wagner later wrote on this meeting, saying, "Alas, he is so handsome and wise, so full and lovely, that I fear that his life must melt away in his vulgar world like a fleeting dream of the gods." So they kind of bonded over their love of the grandiose. So I think I may have hinted on this in an earlier episode, but Wagner did not call his operas operas. He called them Gesamtkunstwerk, which means complete masterwork. Because not only did he write the music, he often wrote the stories, at least he did for the Ring Cycle. He wrote the libretto for instance, his opera on the Flying Dutchman. He used Heinrich Heine's text for it. But they both have these love for, like, grandiose stories and, like, over-the-top excess. Just take all of the money and throw it into this art and make it incredible. And, yeah. So, to honor that spirit, King Ludwig would eventually go on to construct yet another castle that is actually only a 40-minute walk from his childhood home that was surrounded by knights. This one is called Neuschwanstein Castle. And I shit you not, having witnessed this castle, every freaking room, except for the throne room, is just, like, murals of an homage to Wagner operas. Like, I walked in here, y'all, and I'd be like, oh, that one's Parsifal. Oh, that one's Lohengrin. Oh, that's Tristan and Isolde. I was like, I was hardcore nerding out, and I was kind of disappointed because, like, I did know that going in, but, like, was hoping there might be, like, another music nerdy person on the tour, English or German speaking, who is like, oh, Wagner! But it was really, really clear to me and everyone else that I was, like, this opera nerd who is like, oh my god, it's Wagner's operas everywhere. And swans. There were just so many swans in every room. But also, opera. It was so great. So castles aren't, like, cheap or anything. So, and this castle, Neuschwanstein, would actually be, like, the nail in Ludwig's coffin for his ministry being like, you are freaking nuts. How could, like, they begged him, like, don't, Ludwig, nah, no, you can't spend people's tax dollars like this. Does that sound familiar? You can't just use this money to construct a castle as an homage to this man who you probably have a giant crush on, because even though he was married, it is pretty well documented that King Ludwig was gay. Pretty well documented. is it that there's nothing said about a homosexual relationship between the two of them, but like, you don't, people talk, oh, well, I would give, people talk about, oh, I would give them the world. I love my partner so much. Oh, I would give you everything. Nah, Ludwig was like, I have money. I'm going to build this composer a freaking castle and fund every project. It's like a sugar daddy situation, but in reverse, because Ludwig was the young one here. Gosh. Like, I just want a fan like that. I want a fan who can help me pay for graduate school. That's all I really want, guys. That's all. Anyway, but no, this castle is absolutely amazing. And it is over the top. And as soon as the tour guide was explaining to us, like, if Wagner opera is excessive. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he was like, yeah, Ludwig wanted to make this over the top and so elegant as the worlds that Wagner created. And I was like, that makes sense. That makes so much sense. And man, did he ever accomplish it. And this was actually something I didn't know. Prior to the construction of this castle, Ludwig was giving too much money to Wagner, and the ministry was like, hey, so you're doing a really good job of helping Wagner, but, like, we need you to dial it back a little bit, or we're gonna take away the crown from you, we're gonna make you not king anymore. We kinda need you to not... And he, like, legit considered it. He was like, I don't know, guys. I don't know. Should I be king? Or continue to just throw money at this composer? He considered abdicating the crown for a composer. And I'm like, that is the best compliment you could ever get. Like, this guy was willing to throw away his money and his money and title for music. Isn't that just, like, the sweetest, most wonderful thing? So, before, this is, just, I'm just gonna kind of wrap up here on my favorite super fan, Mad King Ludwig. This is, I've never heard of any other fandom quite like this. Any other super fan is just put to shame. I mean, I don't doubt that there are some people, like, given the means, would do similar things for any musician throughout history, but, like, hell, if someone had the money to just, the extra money just hanging around, or, you know, income from, like, being a king that's probably from your public to, like, make a castle for Beyonce, I wouldn't be surprised if someone who had that kind of resources did that. I mean, look at, like, fan rooms and, like, people who just do crazy, like, make tour buses to go follow around their bands or their football teams. Like, there are some money being poured into just showing how much they love the thing. Look how much I love the thing. I want to make sure everyone knows it, so I'm going to spend excessive amounts of money, no matter how much that is. Just enough money to make people think, wow, you put so much time and energy, and this is how you chose to do it. But, I don't know, when I went into this castle in Germany, I really just strongly identified with the love here for his music. Let me clarify, for Wagner's music. Wagner was a flawed, racist, anti-Semitic human being, but his music changed tonality, and what he was doing was very new, and he changed a lot in classical music. So, was he flawed? Yes. Was his music great? Yes. Was he racist? Yes. Was Mad King Ludwig obsessed with him? Hell yes. So with that, we're going to take a break. a brief intermission, and I will see y'all in a moment.
Do you like improv comedy, compelling storytelling, and colorful characters? Well, then Kirstie's probably is not for you. Do you like pirates, random rotten luck, and poorly thought out jokes? Then you need to listen to Infinity Break's brand new actual play podcast, Kirstie's. Join Jacob McCarthy as undead pirate dad Captain Seamus Kincaid, Kat Wendt as knife-happy rogue Cecilia Silverheart, and Bethany Luthold as tough-as-nails brawler Finn McBludgeon. Me? I'm your shipmaster, Ben Hamlin, and I hope you'll join us on the Cursed Seas every other Friday right here on InfinityBreak.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bach, and I'm Beethoven. That's one of my favorite vines. Rip Vine. Anyway, I digress. So, just talked about one special super all-star super fan, and now we're going to talk about one super all-star composer who we talked a little bit about last time, Franz Liszt. Born in 1811, died in 1886. He and Wagner, actually, well, he died in the same year as Ludwig and was born 2 years before Wagner. So, contemporaries, Romantic era composers. I should probably do an episode on what is the Baroque era, the Classical era, and the Romantic era. Yeah, if you guys, like, have requests for, like, Grace, you keep talking about this thing. What is this thing? Please tell me. Tweet at me. At Grace Notes, or comment, or send me a pigeon, I don't know. Comment on Infinity Break, comment on this episode, tweet at me. Anyway, oh, back from that tangent, Romantic era composer. But he was also, many composers actually performed their work, but probably the most important, one of the most important things about Franz Liszt was that he basically paved the way and, like, the this is how you do it book for concert performers, which is pretty amazing. So, how many of y'all played an instrument as a child, and how many of y'all had to do recitals? Music majors out there, if you have not done your junior and senior recitals, you will soon. And for those of you out there who have not done a solo recital, let me tell you, it takes a lot of planning and a lot of work. Recitals are hard, and guess who we can all blame it on? Franz Liszt. Musicologist Robert Greenberg said that Franz Liszt was the template, the model, for every performing solo concert pianist in the 1840s. Franz Liszt actually coined the term solo recital. For a while, it was just called a soliloquy, which is, for those of y'all who aren't theater people, soliloquy is like a speech or a monologue, except you're doing it for yourself. So, I mean, unless you're going to be one of those performers, in air quotes, like, I give recitals for myself, and people just show up, and that's cool and everything, but this is really for me. It's like, yeah, that's true, but you're also selling tickets because it's a business, and you want to share art with people. If it was just for you, you could play like no one is listening, except no one really is. In the privacy of your own home, but you want to share it with people, so you're doing it for other people. And a soliloquy is when the character is on stage talking to themselves. So I guess I kind of get it, but solo recital makes a lot more sense. So not only is that impressive that he made a career of recitaling throughout Europe, internationally, he made a career of just like, hey guys, come listen to me play. And just me and play a whole bunch of stuff, but the whole time it's probably just going to be piano. There might be some collaboration, but probably just piano. He was also the first to perform the whole of the known keyboard repertory from Bach to his contemporary Chopin. And he did so, moreover, from memory. As a composer and orchestrator too, he was revolutionary, writing pioneering works that opened up whole new worlds of expression. And that is according to Dr. Oliver Hilmes, who was born in 1971. He wrote a biography on Franz Liszt, so this guy knows what he's talking about. So Liszt was just kind of a phenomenon of a human being, clearly, just playing the whole piano repertoire. Like, that piano is probably piano, clavier, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name. The more I think about it. Anyway, string, the piano as an instrument, all the way back, it's like there's so much keyboard music out there. It is old. Old, old, old. All the way from to the Baroque, a little bit before. It is, there's a lot of repertoire for it, so that's very, very, very impressive. And to have it memorized, like, just, this is for people who are not music majors and maybe aren't friends with a whole bunch of different types of musicians, usually the only people who have to memorize their repertoire for a recital or any performance are singers. Singers are the only ones. Most of the time, like, for example, for symphony, orchestra, and all that, the orchestra has their sheet music in front of them. Sometimes if you're playing a concerto, sometimes you'll see people have music in front of them, but that is less, that's not quite as often because they're the soloist. So less, yeah, they just don't have their music. But if you're in the orchestra, then you don't. But usually in my experience at my university, my friends who were instrumentalists got to look at their music during the recital. So the fact that Liszt was like, not only am I going to invent the recital, but I'm going to do a lot of this stuff from memory, lols, was just very impressive from a musical level. And the fact that he was able to do this for so many different types of music, crossing so many styles and just years in general, that's pretty amazing. So Franz was just the bee's knees, and people kind of got a hold of that, and there was this thing called Listomania, which is a term coined by Heinrich Heine, Listomania. And this is particularly in reference to the behavior of his fans. So I would like you all to think of, depending on how old you all are, think of like the stereotypical boy band concert. Like a One Direction, a Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Justin Bieber. Just, I want you to imagine the crowd of screaming women, sobbing, just like absolutely out of control. If you've seen the musical Bye Bye Birdie, which is a parody on the whole Elvis Presley madness, there's a whole scene where he's singing his song Honestly Sincere, and all of the women in the chorus are just fainting, 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 dancing, and the guys are just like, what's going on? Why is my girlfriend freaking out? She doesn't do that when we're hanging out. I feel inadequate. I'm just gonna hold her here while she faints and kind of be threatened by this rock star who's actually kind of just a creep and an alcoholic. But the women are just like, this guy's amazing, and dancing, and just so, like, amazed and in love with his performance that they're just brought to dancing and convulsing. I would like you to picture that, but with women in the 19th century. And for some reason, that kind of behavior with women in what I think of 19th century dress is just hilarious. It just makes it so much funnier in my mind. So, Dr. Oliver Helms, again, still alive, he stresses, and this is a quote from his book, from his biography on List. In the process, he effectively invented the profession. No, that's the wrong quote. My bad. I take a lot of notes here. And, oh, no, that was the right quote. Anyway. Hilm stresses, in the process, he effectively invented the profession of the international concert pianist. Crowned heads of state paid court to him. Women threw themselves at his feet and others lost their reason. The popular press of the time reported at length on Liszt's concerts, and at even greater length on the numerous escapades that fueled the feverish interest in them. So these were like a social phenomenon. They were just like, hey, everyone, Liszt is in town. And this is what everyone did at the Liszt concert. This is how nuts people went. And I would just like to read this one in particular quote. So, when we talk about this mania, it's not just like music nerds. As much as I really wish it were, it's not like, oh my gosh, look at him playing. Wow, did you hear that portamento and how expressive it was? No, it's more like, I like the way he fingered those keys. I went there, but it's raunchy. And so here's how Hilms puts it. I'm going to two different excerpts. Women tore at each other's hair, trying to lay hands on a glass or handkerchief that Liszt had used. And here is perhaps my favorite excerpt, if I must spell out all the dirty details. And I would like to do it in a dramatic reading. All manner of erotic and secret desires. There were women who forgot everything, including their family's good name, their refined upbringing, to be close to their God. These women... Okay, end of the excerpt. Now this is just me. These women were, like, sinfully in love with Liszt, and that means sex. So in case you're not picking up on the theme between the last two episodes, the 19th century, everyone's talking about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. But let's also be super puritanical still, but we're still got sex on the brain. It was not just, oh wow, what great music. It was like, I want to be the bench you're sitting on and all that stuff. So it was like, yeah, like, I'm super attracted to this man. There was also documents and events of baronesses and countesses. So women of refined upbringing and good family names that tore at each other's hair in trying... they were beating up each other to get a hold of things that he'd used. That's insane. And then also, he also describes it as these recitals were scenes of rock star hysteria, and fans were not only ripping at each other, oh no, no, they were ripping at his clothes, and like, going for his hair. Okay, this dude had like a long head of hair, and you know how you think of like old 19th century dudes with like the kind of like the man low ponytail and the like how they kind of look like it's pulled back in the Founding Fathers? Nah, this guy had like the, you know how we think of like the emo hair where it like it's slightly covering one eye? It was basically that. Angsty gentleman. I'll make sure to put a video in the playlist that has photos of Franz Liszt. He totally looks like that angsty guy in the back of your English class who thinks his poetry is great. except he's actually just an amazing pianist. People were throwing themselves, women particularly, throwing themselves to grab cigar butts that he'd discarded or broken piano strings. So he was known for the hair. No, it was like the Bieber hair of the time. I shit you not. It was the long, kind of in your face, but you can still see his eyes. It was the hair. And people followed him on these international concert tours. So he had like, oh, we talk about, oh yeah, like Taylor Swift and Beyonce, great fan following, but also no. There were fans who followed him internationally on his tours. Like, you hear about the Grateful Dead tours and the Deadheads who, like, follow them. Get on my level. Or get on the level of these 19th century women following Franz Liszt when you don't have, like, AC. You don't have, like, I don't know, common amenities. It was much more of a trek. And on that point, so, I might be like, Grace, what's the big deal? We have so many rock stars that have obsessive fans today. Why is Franz Liszt such a big deal? Well, let me tell you. Those contemporary stars have mass media attention and appeal. They have the internet. They have print media that has just evolved so much to be able to push, cultivate that fandom, regardless of whether or not they actually have that much talent. They also, like, have people who write the music for them, people who do the editing and, like, sound and, freaking, like, vocal enhancement. And, did Franz Liszt have any of that? No, it was all his reputation preceding him from these performances. It was all real. So there's actually one quote that I really liked from one of the articles I did in my was reading in my research. Today's superstars would look like little schoolboys compared to Franz Liszt. And I love that so much just because, Liszt is wonderful. Liszt has some great music. I'm going to put in a couple different compositions by Liszt in this playlist. All right, so that's going to be, I'm going to wrap it up now with those two examples of super fandom in classical music. And let's just go on and dive into Grace's earworms. What have I been listening to a lot? Oh my God, so much Baroque. I've been trying to fill up my rep book and my audition book, and you know, there's just certain pieces and eras that fit better in my voice than others. It's like fabric. Like, some people really, really like wool. Some people really hate it. It's just all about what feels good to you. And for me, Baroque is just like, oh, it's not a fun time. But I finally found my piece. Any advice to any other young vocalists out there is, like, pick a couple singers who you're projected to maybe be like in the future, and look through their rep. Look through their CDs. They've already done the hard work for you. You have, like, with Spotify, there's so much music, like, at your fingertips that you can go and find, like, oh, here is basically everything this one person sang in their entire career. It's amazing. And, yeah, so I've been listening to a lot of that, and listening to a lot of Benjamin Britten, because I'm doing an aria of his in my audition book. And I've just been scouring across a lot of different genres. So, but for the last week, it was mainly Baroque and Benjamin Britten. All right, y'all. I will see you in 2 weeks. I don't know what the episode will be. I'll try and announce something on Twitter eventually. But thank you so much for tuning in. I love my fans. If I could, I would construct them a castle. But alas, that would have to be a sandcastle, but my gosh, would it be a beautiful sandcastle, or I'd try really hard to make it a beautiful sandcastle. Anyhow, I am Grace, and this episode has been noted, and I will see you in 2 weeks. This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we are telling stories our own way. You can check out IB's other shows, comics, podcasts, and videos by going to infinitybreak.net. Stay in the loop by finding us at infinitybreak23 on social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. If you want to support us, check out our Patreon and start a monthly donation or visit our shop. Grab t-shirts, stickers, and more related to your favorite Infinity Break shows. Until next time, stay tuned. Tell your friends and stay in the loop.